Talk a little bit about love and what I would call moral courage. Moral courage. You know, the kind of courage that calls a person to do the right thing rather than the easy thing. The kind of courage that compels a person to walk through the darkest valley or over the highest peak rather than circumventing a situation completely for what's best for ourselves or for our own future or for our own popularity. The kind of courage that causes you to go against the grain rather than swim with the current. The kind that causes you to take the path of most resistance rather than jumping on the gravy train. I say this because, in a sense, this is what Joseph, the father of Jesus, the biological father, you know, his family of origin father in the story, I think he faces some circumstances in which they require moral courage. I think that's really his story. So a question I want to ask is, how are we to know what is right, what is just, what to do as a person of faith? How would God have us judge and choose to make decisions? This is what I want to share with you, because I think we live in a time and a place where all of us, especially those that lead us, could use an infusion of moral courage. So let's talk a little bit about moral courage today. Now, I don't know if you've seen this movie. It's been out for a while, so spoiler alert. If you haven't seen the movie Flight, I guess, and you feel like you're really compelled to watch something that came out in the early 2000s or mid-2000s, plug your ears now. But it stars Denzel Washington. He's one of my favorite actors. Denzel's awesome. And I don't know about you, but when I heard this story today, it immediately came to me. And as I read it this week, I couldn't help but think of this movie. And I reflected on it. So a little bit about Flight. So in Flight, Denzel Washington plays a guy named Whip Whitaker, Captain Whitaker. He's a commercial airline pilot. Commercial airline pilot. I don't know if anybody here is a pilot, but you know, he's a good pilot, but he has a bad problem. He is a raging alcoholic, and he abuses substances. Now, for a while, you know, that's problematic as a pilot, right? Absolutely. For a while, it doesn't seem to affect his work. He's so good at flying under the radar while under the influence that nobody seems to care. Nobody seems to notice. Autopilot takes over. He collects a check. Life is good. The movie begins with him on a bender with his girlfriend, who happens to be one of the flight attendants. Her name is Katerina. And he boards the plane. As he boards the plane that morning, he has her mix him a drink, a bit of hair of the dog. She fetches two little mini bottles from the galley. Everything seems great. Everything seems great. It's a flight like every other flight. He's there with the woman that he loves. He's sipping a cocktail, kissing the sky as the plane goes up, up, up. But then it isn't great. Due to a mechanical issue, the plane starts to lose control. It begins to nosedive, tossing luggage around. Flight crew members are being thrown through the air like rag dolls. The autopilot doesn't work. The stabilization doesn't work. It's very clear that this plane is going to crash. And he is the one that's at the wheel. Mr. Whitaker prepares for a crash landing. He gets the plane to an open field outside of Atlanta, braces himself and the passengers. Next thing we know, he wakes up in a hospital. It turns out he's a hero. He has saved hundreds of lives by crash landing this plane in an open field. However, there have been folks that have lost their lives, including his girlfriend, Miss Katerina. She didn't make it. She was up walking around when things went south. But he was a hero until he wasn't. The airline doesn't want to admit fault for what happens. The manufacturer of the plane certainly doesn't want to be at blame for what happens. And during an investigation, the National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB, finds out that Mr. Whitaker had alcohol in his blood. But his sample was technically out of bounds because it was taken while he was unconscious in the hospital without his consent. So we have the man that has landed the plane successfully now being investigated by the NTSB. He becomes the subject of an investigation about the accident, and everything starts to unravel about his narrative. Near the end of the film, Mr. Whitaker is sitting in front of a panel of investigators testifying about the events that led up to the accident. He's asked about whether he's ever had alcohol issues or drug addictions in the past, and he says no, absolutely not. He's asked about his alcohol consumption or substance issues leading up to the day of the accident. Absolutely not, he says. But we know that's not true. We saw the bender at the beginning of the movie. He denies it, he denies it, he denies it, knowing his blood sample is inadmissible. Can't be used as evidence against him, so he's lying through his teeth. And then it is revealed that due to the severe turbulence he, at the beginning of the flight, had suspended the beverage service. So it was suspicious that two single service bottles were found empty in a trash bin. Mr. Whitaker is questioned repeatedly about who took the vodka. Was it you that took the vodka? No, I didn't take it. Who took it? Only five flight crew members would have had access to this. Yourself, Katerina, and three other folks that don't have any alcohol in their system. So who took the vodka? Who took the vodka? You suspended the in-flight beverage service. Who took it? It is revealed that his deceased girlfriend, the flight attendant, Miss Katerina Marquez, had elevated blood alcohol content, postmortem. He is pressed whether it is his opinion if she was the one that took it. He's at a moral crossroads, faced with the choice of whether he wants to get off scot-free. She's dead. There's nothing she can say. Or speak ill of this loved one of his. Throw her under the bus. He had a choice to make. Mr. Whitaker says, God help me. He's pressed. What do you mean, God help you? God help me. What do you mean, God help me? God help me. He reveals that he drank the vodka, that he was drunk days before the flight, that he was drunk during the flight, and he was drunk right there as he was testifying in front of the panel. He loved her, and he couldn't drag her through the mud after her death. God help me, he says. God help me. How would God have us judge and choose what is the right thing to do when we find ourselves at a crossroads with a difficult choice? I think the answer is clear. It is on the side of love. We all face choices in our lives requiring moral courage, whether to do the right thing or the easy thing. In Matthew's gospel, we hear about Jesus' birth, and we witness an act of moral courage, I believe. Mary was engaged to Joseph, but before they lived together, as we know the story and as we heard again today, she was found to be with child. Joseph was obviously upset. The low road for him would have been, and probably the popular road for him would have been, to lash out, to publicly shame her. Okay? And that probably would have been the acceptable thing to do in Jesus' culture. She probably could have been stoned. But Joseph, being righteous, we hear, planned on leaving her without doing that. He had planned on dismissing her, that is, quietly leaving her alone to raise the child. Now, that sounds cold still, right? It is cold. But it's a different path. This culture is far removed from our own, and women were treated as possessions, which is problematic in itself. But there's also a sense of betrayal, of broken trust, of shame, not just on her, but that Joseph would have been inviting in on himself if he were to stay with her. So he has an internal debate. Do I stay with her? Do I leave her? The choice to him was, I'm going to dismiss her without making a big scene. We hear that an angel, a messenger of God, comes to Joseph in a dream and explains how Mary's pregnancy came to be. Do not worry. Do not be afraid, he says. Mary here. Don't be afraid. I had a good discussion at our Bible study earlier today about don't be afraid. What would you be afraid of? Be afraid of the public shame. the humiliation, in a sense, in this culture and time. So Joseph really was doing something by staying with her that would have required courage. It wasn't just about being a good guy. It would have required courage. So he learns how her pregnancy came to be and ultimately stays engaged to her, gets married, and Jesus is born. I think when it comes down to it, Joseph can be read in two different ways. On the one hand, we can read him as a guy who's ready to go with the tides, do the easy thing, dismiss his fiancée, to leave her, start over again, and find love somewhere else. Let her figure this mess out on her own. But then an angel goads him into doing the right thing, to stay with your fiancée. On the other hand, you could read him as a guy who wanted so much to buck tradition, to make things work, to go against the grain of the societal and gender norms back in his day and the cultural norms, that he just has this internal debate. He doesn't know what to do. And he finally resolves that he's going to let her go. But then an angel shows him another path, a path that he knows is right. I think that is the God help me moment in the text when that angel arrives and shows him another path. We could read Joseph both ways. The text gives us both options. It's up for us to judge and choose. What Joseph does, however, is buck gender and social norms in a time and a place where one would never be caught dead in his situation. And so he has courage to stay with her, and she to stay with him, I would say. Whether we can muster it up from within or whether we lean on God for a source of moral courage, I don't know that that makes a difference, but I think it's important that we have it. What is important is that we show courage in a time when a lot of people would like to put their heads in the sand. Like Joseph, each of us face a million impossible, contradictory circumstances throughout our lives, and we have choices to make where we must muster up courage to make a difficult decision. Whether to take the path of least resistance or to do what is necessary. And so I ask, how do we do that? How do we make those decisions? How do we judge what is right? I think the better question is, how would God have us judge and choose what is the right thing to do when we find ourselves facing difficult choices or crossroads in our lives? The answer is clear. Not to answer a question with a question. But when presented with a difficult choice between two options, we can ask ourselves, what side does God fall on every time? That is the side of love every time. Not on love for power or money or privilege or resources. Not on security or our own futures or me before thee, but of love. Love for the poor, benefit of the doubt, and possibility of redemption. The courage of Joseph to stay engaged to Mary, to do the right thing when the easy thing, dismissing her, would have been much more comfortable, much more beneficial and to his advantage, and would have been the appropriate thing for most people to do in his day. That act of courage has allowed each of us to experience the love of God through Jesus. His courage has changed our lives forever. And so it is my prayer that we can remember that God would have us choose on the side of love, to do the right thing when we face situations that challenge us in our personal lives, in our family lives, in our church life, in our work life, in our life as a nation. Because I think we live in a time when all of us, especially those that lead us, could use some more moral courage. Let us pray for courage. Let us fall on the side of love when we are faced with a crossroads. May it be so. Amen.